Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 12th of September 2015. It's great to have you aboard the show. Today I'm going to be talking a lot about Syria, about the refugee situation. There's quite a lot of things I want to get through. And what I want to really focus on for Australian listeners is the facts about how your political elites right across the spectrum have completely lied to you and completely allied themselves with the agenda of the military-industrial complex and the US empire. It's a total betrayal, ladies and gentlemen, of Australia's democracy, of Australia's sovereignty, that its political leaders engage in this propagandistic behaviour in relation to foreign powers, in relation to sort of empire building of foreign powers. And it is up to us in the alternative media to just make a very big stink about this and to continually alert everyone to the fact that you have been let down. And you've been let down by the Liberal Party, you've been let down by the Labor Party, and you've been let down by the Greens. And I want to actually start with the Greens, because this is the most most unpleasant of all, really, is the fact that the Greens have adopted this position now of supporting the American propaganda points on the Syrian situation and the Assad regime. And it hints that the Greens are becoming more and more a mainstream party. And I actually have an interview I want to play to you with Andrew Bolt, a well-known right-wing TV personality in Australia, speaking to the leader of the Greens, and in which Bolt actually puts forward that very view, that the Greens are now becoming a kind of a centrist mainstream party that may indeed replace the Labor Party. But, I mean, it seems like an incredible thing to say. But when you look at their policy positions, you can see, yes, they are adopting the policy positions that go with being a completely controlled, completely contrived, fake a political entity. And I'm going to play to you now an interview that was on Sky News, in which the Greens leader, Richard Di Natale, reveals that, indeed, that the Greens now simply adopt a completely false, unsupportable, propagandistic, dumbed-down view of what is happening in Syria. Here we go.
Whether we take a couple of thousand extra refugees is going to make no difference at all to the big picture. And the big
picture
emerges from the chaos in the Middle East. Doesn't your desire to get things better lead you to support military strikes on the force which has caused the greatest suffering, the most death and the most brutal behaviour, namely Islamic State? I mean, isn't a logical conclusion of your moral concern that you would be supporting strikes against IS in Syria?
Well, Greg, firstly, it makes a massive difference to those 20,000 people who would be resettled here. It makes an enormous difference to the lives of 20,000 people who would otherwise be languishing in a refugee camp, or worse, face the potential fate of dying in transit. It makes an enormous difference to those people.
Of course it does. I accept that. It doesn't make any difference to the big picture. You just said there are 4 million displaced people.
It makes an enormous difference to the... just let me finish, Greg. It makes an enormous difference to the Australian nation as well. We are a nation that is richer, that is better, that is stronger because of the contribution that people from right across the world have made to this country. In terms of what the consequences that flow from that, I mean, you fundamentally misunderstand the conflict in Syria. I mean, it is the Assad regime that is responsible for over 250,000 deaths. The Islamic State is one of a small number of actors within that conflict, only one of the actors. The major driver to the 4 million people fleeing Syria, to the millions of others that are internally displaced is the Assad regime. And we're...
I'm just going to pause it there. Now, that statement that he just made is a complete lie. I believe he knows it's a lie. There is no evidence to support what he said. The flood of refugees leaving Syria was created by the brutal genocidal activities of the ISIS group in Syria, and it started after that point. There is simply nothing to back up what he's saying. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Assad. I'm not a huge fan of Arab strongmen, you know, leaders like this in the Middle East. And I don't think Syria is necessarily an ideal democracy. But the claims that are made about Assad have nothing to do with the truth. They have nothing to do with facts. They only relate to the desire of the Western powers to see the Syrian regime toppled and a more friendly regime put in place that is less friendly with Russia. That's the whole point. And if Richard Di Natale was in any way truthful and reflective of the need for Australia to have a political party that stands up for national sovereignty, for the rights of individuals, and to oppose military hegemony, he would admit that there is a global power play at work that is trying to isolate and marginalize Russia, because Russia is seen as a threat to their power. I mean, this is perfectly within the scope of Green's policy for him to be able to say that, but he won't say it. He's become a mouthpiece for the powers that be. He's just become a completely sold out, middle of the road mouthpiece. Let me continue.
Silent on that. We're somehow going to isolate, in some fantasy world, Islamic State targets who are but a bit player when it comes to the conflict that is going on within Syria. I mean, I think you fundamentally misunderstand what is going on in that country.
Well, Senator,
if you
I think you're the first
person dropping
to describe
bombs
Islamic
on Islamic
State,
State
as a bit player. I think that's,
Syria,
that's a remarkable new
In Syria, the major driver of the conflict that is going on there is the Assad regime. And this government is silent on that issue. It somehow feels that we are able to drop bombs on one of the actors in that conflict that is not the major driver for the exodus of Syrian refugees. That's just a fact.
Senator Di Natale, do you accept that the number, the huge surge in numbers of Syrian refugees have happened in more recent times? This war has been going for, what, 4 years? But the huge surge in numbers has happened in more recent times as Islamic State has increased its power in Syria and parts of Iraq.
Well, there are a number of actors that have been involved in the conflict in Syria. Islamic State is but one of them. But you continue to ignore that the major factor here is the Assad regime itself. That is at the root of what is going on here. And we as a nation are silent on that. Our contribution, I mean, to think that dropping bombs on Syria... I mean, to drop bombs on Syria is somehow going to resolve what is going on there. It's fanciful. And if the experience in Iraq shows it's anything, it's that going in this heavy-handed way, in a conflict which is so complicated, so messy, and committing Australian lives in the name of somehow trying to resolve what is a very, very difficult and complex situation, to think that that will somehow improve things, history tells us that's not the case.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. of course, the Greens always adopt a non-aggression viewpoint in relation to government policy. They always do that. But it's always weak. It's always qualified. And as you can see here, he's almost hinting that if we were dropping bombs on Assad forces, that he'd agree with it. I mean, he said like three times, very, very stridently, that you know, the problem is the Assad regime and we're dropping bombs on ISIS. It, by implication, he's saying we should be dropping bombs on the Assad regime. Of course, what Richard Di Natale is saying is echoed around the world by Western leaders. And I'm going to play to you now a recent video by Mimi Alaham, Syrian girl, who has been on our show a few times, and I'm hoping to get her on again, in which she goes through some of this misinformation and the way in which the Western leaders simply echo the empty, fake talking points of blaming the Assad regime. So here we go. We'll be going to break shortly, but I'll start playing the clip here from Mimi, and then we'll return to that after we come back from the break. Here we go.
This is Syrian girl. The media is painting the refugee crisis as an acute issue, but the Syrian war and refugees have been there for 4 years. And Aylan wasn't the first child refugee to drown. Last month, an 11-year-old Syrian girl drowned off the coast of Egypt. So why is there such a media push now? Well, it's just in time for when France, Britain, and Australia were asked to join the US's war on Syria. In fact, the US asked Australia to join its coalition a week before Aylan died. So they're using sympathy for this child's death to drop bombs on more children while crying crocodile tears over them as they run from those bombs. Just look at this headline from The Sun. Bomb Syria for Aylan. You'd think they'd make themselves less obvious. This is the city that Aylan comes from. The area was bombed to smithereens by the US. Rupert Murdoch couldn't even wait for Aylan's body to go cold before he started exploiting it for more war in Syria. Turkey's also causing the refugee crisis to push for the creation of a buffer zone in Syria as part of their continued attempt at regime change. So, before you wave refugees welcome while letting your government get away with murder, there are a few things you need to know. The whole Syrian war and refugees were caused in the first place because the US and NATO backed Islamist rebels in Syria in 2011. In spite of this, politicians and the mass media are blaming the Syrian President Assad for Europe's entire refugee crisis and using that to convince people that there needs to be a war in Syria. But how can Assad be blamed for the entire refugee crisis when the majority of refugees aren't even Syrian, but either poor immigrant workers or refugees from other wars such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, and Libya, all the other places that have suffered US interventions in recent years? Yet the media labels them all Syrian anyway to convince Europeans that this problem can be solved by intervention in Syria. They even go as far as to label sub-Saharan Africans as Syrian because they believe their viewers are too ignorant to notice the difference. How racist do you have to be to confuse Asia with Africa?
Romania's Coast Guard rescued 70 migrants, mostly Syrians and Iraqis, packed onto a small fishing boat that was in danger of sinking as they attempted to make the crossing to Europe in stormy seas on Saturday.
We're just going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. I will be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I've just been playing to you a clip there from a Syrian girl. I will return to that. But I want to just highlight now the fact that the claims that she's making that the refugees are not genuine refugees, these are coming from many sources. I've got an article here from the Sydney Morning Herald, Migrant Crisis, Pakistanis and Others Dumping IDs to Become Syrian. And the article here has many eyewitness reports of people actually literally dumping their IDs, people from Iraq and Pakistan and different countries, and then entering the borders of Germany and other countries with no ID, and some of them are using fake documents, and that's because the surest route to asylum is to be a refugee from war and not an economic migrant. Serbian border police say that 90% of those arriving from Macedonia, about 3,000 a day, claim they are Syrian, although they have no documents to prove it. You can see something is fishy when most of those who cross into Serbia enter January 1 as the date of their birth, and that's from a border police officer. The chief of the European Union Border Agency said that trafficking in fake Syrian passports has increased. So this is a confirmed fact that this is really happening. And the crisis now is a crisis that's partly real, that there are these people fleeing from war, and that's terrible, and I think they should be helped. I totally support helping refugees. But the problem now is that because of the way Western powers have conducted themselves in building this up and essentially creating the crisis, and then countries like Germany saying, everyone can come in, they have now created an additional crisis that simply wouldn't have existed if they'd not engaged in the military subversion of Syria in the first place with the help of US covert ops and various other funding of rebels, and also the tacit support of the Gulf states, who are themselves supporting the extremists in Syria. So this has all been created directly by policy. So I'll just return now to the video here from Syrian Girl, because she gets into some very important details. So here we go.
The number of Syrian refugees is also being falsely conflated because other immigrants and refugees are simply claiming to be Syrian and throwing their original passports away. Pakistani and Bangladeshi passports are being found discarded near border crossings.
Completed here, 29%.
We're just four Syrian
people. Just four Syrian people.
Syria.
All Iraq. 25 in Iraq.
All the rest of them are Iraqi.
And they said, I don't have passport. I don't have
anything
to say who I am. So yeah. I'm Syrian. Where's your passport?
I don't have,
because the government in Germany allowed everything for the Syrian people. You get house, you get money, you get food.
So it pays Syria. To be Syrian.
Yes.
And some European politicians are exploiting the war in Syria to push for an open border immigration policy. So was it the Syrian government that caused these refugees? Or was it these same politicians and their liberal interventionists that are now crying over the refugees' deaths? People like Angelina Jolie, ironically the ambassador of the UN refugee program, caused these African refugees to drown off the coast of Libya because she supported the Libyan rebels who ethnically cleansed them. It was also Amnesty International who claimed Gaddafi was using black immigrants as mercenaries, which resulted in their ethnic cleansing. Now Amnesty International are raking in the donations over their deaths. It was these same liberal interventionists who in 2011 supported Al-Qaeda-affiliated rebels in Syria, and they dare yell, shame, shame, shame for not letting in the Syrian refugees. How about shame on you for ruining our beautiful country? The refugee crisis didn't start when Syrians tried to cross into Europe, but when Europeans tried to cross into Syria to join ISIS. Syrians are being pushed out of their country while multinational Islamic State moves in from all over the world. But the so-called coalition on ISIS is a lie. The US and its allies have no intention of actually defeating ISIS. Instead of working with the Syrian army, the only force capable of fighting ISIS on the ground, they are preventing the Syrian army from doing their job. Only 4 years ago, Syria was a well-off and prosperous country that even accepted 2 million Iraqi refugees. Now, we've become the refugees. Syrian refugees want your help, yes, but to get back home to their own country. Almost half of Syria's population are refugees, 3 million outside of Syria, and 7 million of them are internally displaced inside Syria. Shouting refugees welcome, while well-meaning, is not enough. You're not going to be able to airlift 10 million Syrians into Europe.
Just pause it there, because I think it's really important to emphasize that this position that's adopted by the more left-leaning political influences in the West is actually part of the agenda. And that's why the Greens, of course, who will say, oh, we must have compassion, you know, we must allow the refugees to come in. This is why what the Greens are doing is such a betrayal. It is so wicked, ladies and gentlemen. What the Greens are doing to Australia now, I believe, has been revealed, and it is incontrovertible. You know, I was more inclined to see a lot of the Green policy as simply a bit misguided in relation to climate change, which, of course, we've talked about a lot. And in relation to foreign conflicts, the Greens have historically been pretty much on the right side, but too weak to really have any meaningful effect. But now, as their numbers have grown and their influence has grown, they've just simply moved to the centre. And of course, this idea that that the solution to all this now is just to bring in all the refugees, you know, let all the refugees come in, who are not even genuine refugees in many cases, while blocking the efforts of the Syrian government to actually deal with the problem, it's just unbelievably wicked. It is really, really quite an evil situation which has developed. Okay, I will continue a little more here with Syrian Girl, then we'll move on because I've got some other interesting stuff to play for you. Here we go.
Displacing them further from their country is not ideal for anyone. The refugees want to come home. Hear them out for yourself.
انه ترجع سوريا مثل ما كانت لانه انا اول الناس اللي راح ارجع لها لانه بعد سوريا.
Okay, I'll just pause it there because that's got captions and you can't read them. Let me now just return to the question of Australia's military involvement in this conflict, because it has now been approved by the government of Australia that there will be airstrikes on Syria. The Abbott government has confirmed Australia will join US-led airstrikes in Syria, and this is an article from September 9, so they may have already started bombing for all I know. It's the 12th of September now. And this is an article from The Guardian. Is it legal to bomb Syria? 5 facts you need to know. Number 1, who makes the decision on whether to bomb Syria? Bombing a foreign country is a cabinet decision that can be made by the government of the day. This means it needs to go to cabinet for approval and forms part of the powers of the executive. Can the Abbott government bomb a foreign country without Parliament approving the decision? The government could conduct bombings on Syria without any form of parliamentary approval necessary. At a later date, it may need to engage with Parliament over budgetary appropriations, though in the event more funds were needed. We are just going to break. I'll continue with this when we come back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We're talking about Syria. Be right back. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I'm reading to you an article here from TheGuardian.com titled, Is It Legal for Australia to Bomb Syria? Point number three, if Australia decides to conduct airstrikes on Syria, are there any concerns this might breach international law? Members of the United Nations are required to refrain from the threat or use of force against other countries, and conducting an airstrike in Syria would likely be considered such a use of force. What kinds of justifications could Australia rely on in international law? There appear to be two key arguments the Australian government could rely on to defend the bombings. The first justification is the notion of collective self-defence of Iraq. This relates to a long-standing international legal principle that would permit Australia to intervene and is what Brandis strongly alluded to in his comments about the strikes. It's problematic, though, because a number of significant international law cases have outlined that it can only be relied on for the defence of one state against another state, and ISIS is not considered to be a state. Professor of International Law at Sydney University Ben Saul said, it's clear that Iraq is under armed attack by ISIS, so has a right of self-defence against them in its own territory. It's entitled to make requests of foreign powers to assist it. But it's problematic in that you can only use self-defence when it is by a state force. The second justification Australia may rely on is that they are exercising self-defence individually against ISIS. This is one of the arguments that may have been relied on by the United Kingdom government over the drone strike on two British nationals announced earlier this week. Neither justification seems entirely clear. It is, as lecturer at International Law, Australian University said, a legal grey area. Five, what are the possible ramifications for Australia? The ramifications for Australia violating international law are pretty minimal. A case could be brought against Australia in the International Court of Justice by Syria or another state, but in the unlikely event that were to happen, there are no consequences in domestic law that would bind Australia by any such decision. Well, there you go, folks. It looks like pretty much a green light. So you don't have to worry. Our leaders aren't going to be dragged into the International Criminal Court. And there may be a few complaints, but no, because we're tied to the empire, that's why. I want to now play to you a recent interview of the Greens leader, Richard Di Natale, on Andrew Bolt's TV show. Andrew Bolt being a well-known conservative TV commentator in Australia, someone who I violently disagree with on many topics, but who I do disagree with on some, particularly climate change. But I see Andrew Bolt as being very much a puppet of the Murdoch empire, very much a propagandist that has certain speaking points. And you know, when you study the situation that the Western democracies have fallen into, and once you know it deeply, you understand that this is how they operate. They have people in the media that become iconic, that will bind large groups to their viewpoint, that then serves to limit the discussion, limit the dissent, and becomes more manageable. Then you can kind of have two groups that kind of, and you have a pendulum that swings between the two positions. But of course, when you look at the two positions or the two political representations of those positions, they always end up doing pretty much the same thing. Although they have people on either side shouting at each other and making it seem like it's a real big fight, big stoush, you know. It's like championship wrestling. And it's just fascinating here that we've got the Greens leader, first time a Greens leader has ever gone on the Andrew Bolt report. So I'm going to play to you a little bit of that interview, and I may interrupt it to give you my own comments. Here we go.
No Greens leader has ever agreed to come on this show. I'm too evil or they're too scared. Today, that changes. Richard Di Natale took over the Greens leadership 4 months ago, promising to make it more pragmatic. And he joins me now. Thank you so much for your time. What signal are you sending by coming on this show that every other Greens leader is banned? Even Bill Shorten won't come on.
Well, maybe they've got more sense than I do. Look, I'm, you know, what better way of spending Father's Day than talking to you, Andrew?
No, but you are sending a signal here, and I wonder what it is. For example, I think it seems to me your aim, right, is to replace Labor as the main party of the left.
No. I mean, we don't see the world in those terms. You might. Our aim is to give people another option. And whether they be Labor voters, Liberal voters, former Democrat voters, Palmer voters, it doesn't matter. You stand up on behalf of what you believe, good policy, and the rest takes care of itself.
Yeah, but Labor sees you as a great threat, of course, on its left, and has gone to the left a bit to try to, you know, address that. You don't see yourself edging out Labor as the natural home of voters of the left?
I think, as I said when I took on the leadership, we are the natural home of progressive mainstream voters. A lot of those progressive mainstream people are Liberal voters. Many of them are Labor voters. In the end, if you get trapped into this sort of left-right, this is where we sit on the political spectrum, I think you're not doing what you're there to do, and that is to try and put the national interest first. My view is stand up on behalf of the values you believe are important, good policy, and the politics just takes care of itself.
But besides, there also seems to be a reaction to the sort of ultra-tribalism of previous leaders, without naming anyone, but, you know, that it's all a club and you don't break out, you don't negotiate with Tony Abbott, for example.
Oh, well...
You've changed that.
Well, we've done that in the past as well. I think that's...
Not to this extent.
I'll just pause it there. I'm going to skip forward now to the place in the interview where they talk about Syria. And you can see Richard Di Natale really positioning himself as a mainstream centrist viewpoint, very much supportive of the major propaganda points of the American empire. And I can see even Andrew Bolt being taken aback a little by the... by Di Natale's savage critique of the Assad regime. So, but of course, that's tempered by his softly and, you know, welcoming policy towards refugees. Where of course Andrew Bolt is more of the stern kind of viewpoint that we shouldn't just let refugees in randomly. But I can see Andrew Bolt's a little bit surprised at the extreme kind of gung-ho enthusiasm that Richard Di Natale shows for attacking the Assad regime. So I'll just play that for you now.
You've seen the pictures of hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants flooding into Europe, and the tragic picture, of course, of that Syrian boy who drowned trying to get to Greece from Turkey. Doesn't this show you the danger of the sort of relaxed border policies that the Greens promote?
Really? Is that how you see? Oh, well, you've got a 3-year-old kid being dragged out of the water because they're dead. Okay, you've got more people moving across the planet than at any other time in human history. We've got countries right around the world saying, look, we're going to have to provide these people with some help and refuge because this is a crisis. And you want to turn your back on people in that fleeing that persecution?
I don't want to encourage more of what we're seeing.
What we do here in Australia is not going to make an iota of difference to the people fleeing Syria right now. Not an iota of difference. And
but the family wasn't
the
fleeing Syria.
We have an opportunity to
but that
take...
that family, you mentioned a 3-year-old boy.
We have an opportunity to take 20,000 people fleeing that conflict, registered with the UNHCR, in the same way as we did after the Tiananmen Square massacre. We had Hawke then taking 40,000 people. John Howard himself... Kosovo, East Timor, we had a standalone humanitarian intake because we recognised that people were being murdered, killed, and tortured. We can do the same here, and we should.
You mentioned the 3-year-old boy, and it's a tragic story, right? Absolutely. They weren't fleeing Syria.
We've got 4 million people who have fled Syria. 250,000 killed.
Piece of tape.
And we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, playing their interview by Andrew Bolt with the Greens leader, Senator Richard Di Natale. I'll continue that when we come back from the break.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm playing to you here a clip from an interview and the Bolt Report with Greens leader Senator Richard Di Natale. And they're getting into some of the core questions about the Syrian refugee crisis. And, of course, some of the points that are being made about where these refugees are coming from that Andrew Bolt is making, of course, are quite correct. Richard Di Natale is supportive of helping refugees, as I am, but there is something very odd about the angle that the Greens are taking on this in their savage critique of the Assad regime, which it's basically a positioning move. It's basically just a move to show the world that they too support the propaganda and the lies and the massive manipulation of people's thinking, which is part of a global power game being played between the Western powers, Russia and China, and some of the other states that don't go along with the major powers like Iran, Syria and certain South American states. So let me play to you now. I'll just continue with the interview there with Richard Di Natale.
This family, right, were living in Turkey for 3 years in safety. The aunt of the boy lives in Canada, was going to sponsor them to come over there. They went to Europe not to flee anything. Have a look at what the aunt said the real reason for going to Europe was.
So I've been trying to help him fix his teeth. But it's going to cost me 14,000 and up to do it. He need denture, he need teeth implant. My dad, he come up with the idea. He said to me, I think if they go to Europe for his kids and for better future, I think you should do that. And then we'll see if we can fix his teeth.
To fix his teeth.
Okay, so here's the thing, Andrew. You've got 1 in 4 people living in Lebanon who are refugees. 1 in 4.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 4. Living in camps, no opportunity to get an education, to get decent health care and so on. I mean, of course they're going to flee to try and improve their circumstances.
He wasn't living in a camp, he's living in Istanbul.
Well, there are 4 million people. You've picked one example. There are 4 million people who have fled Syria, most of whom will be determined to be genuine refugees. What's your solution?
My solution is to make those countries safe for the people, as in go to Syria, intervene
where
you
can. Drop some bombs. Let's drop some bombs on
Islamic
Syria.
State.
Let's drop some bombs on Syria. Right.
Who do you think they're fleeing? You don't think they're fleeing the Islamic State?
Have you heard of the Assad regime?
Have you heard of the Islamic State?
250,000 deaths directly as a consequence of the Assad regime. Islamic State in Syria is not the main game. The main game in Syria is the Assad regime. The conflict.
The Islamic State is not the main game?
In Syria, it is not. More people have died as a result of the Assad regime than from Islamic State. Fact. Now, it might suit your domestic political agenda, but if you're going to have a genuine debate about what's going on in that country, you would acknowledge that Assad and his regime is the primary factor that has contributed to the movement of 4 million people out of that country and the deaths of 250,000 people.
Richard,
countless other left homeless.
We're out of time. I thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime.
Well, there we have it. You can see the new power play, the new balance of power in Australia. It's very much the Greens seem to be taking the centre position. People are being misled, folks. Of course, it's completely false to suggest that that the Australian government has ever been supportive of the Assad regime. The previous Labor government, of course, expelled the ambassador from Syria. The current government has taken no steps to resuming diplomatic relations with Syria. So, and of course, the bombing campaign on ISIS really has the covert purpose of bringing about regime change in Syria. We all know that. And of course, we all know that they're not really going to stop ISIS by what they're doing. They're going to kill a lot of people. They're going to kill some innocent people. They're going to kill some ISIS. But bombing these people doesn't stop them. I mean, it's quite clear when you're dealing with the type of extremists that these people are, the sort of sociopathic quality that that their leaders have, this is not ever going to work. I mean, the only way you can defeat this is by building strong national, strength within countries, rule of law, which will force these groups into the cracks, and then you'll be able to catch some of them. You'll never be able to catch all of them. But the main thing is to disempower them, and all the hordes of people who follow them, who are sort of people who are simply drawn into it by violence, by threats, by having their own lives destroyed, will be drawn back into the fabric of a normal society. And this is exactly what we saw in Cambodia in the 1970s, when the ordinary people of Cambodia were drawn towards the Khmer Rouge, who were an extremist group led by sociopaths, because their whole existence had been destroyed by US bombing campaigns. And those bombing campaigns were directed against the communist forces, who were seen as the great evil at that time. And of course, all they did was increase extremism. All they did was actually foster the conditions in which extremism could grow and develop, and then, of course, create waves of people following those extremists. So we see history being repeated. It's incredible. They say history doesn't repeat. It rhymes. Well, it's doing almost repetition now. If you compare what they're doing in Syria with the US bombing campaigns in Cambodia in the early 1970s, it is very, very similar. Now, folks, I've got one more story to talk to you about today, and it relates back to the gay marriage question, which has been discussed on and off a lot on the news. And this is a report from Ben Swan, quite an interesting independent news reporter from the US. And he's talking here about marriage and marriage licenses. And he makes a very important point, which I think we all really need to pay attention to, which is that marriage licenses, in the United States at least, were created as part of a racial segregation agenda. And they were created to basically invalidate interracial marriages. And then at a later point in time, they were used to validate interracial marriages as they became more acceptable. But the whole point here was that the origin of this was not really... Yeah, see, people don't understand the origin of something like a marriage license. It is really government interference in people's lives. So I'll just play to you this clip from Reality Check. It'll take us to the end of the show today. Here we go.
Why are you not issuing marriage licenses today?
Because I'm not.
Under whose authority are you not issuing licenses?
Yeah, that was County Clerk Kim Davis from Kentucky claiming that the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage could not be upheld by her office. And though it is her job to issue marriage licenses, she says that she could not do so because of her religious beliefs. So a judge sent her to jail, holding her in contempt, saying that she could issue those licenses. She just wouldn't. And today, in front of a large crowd, Davis was released from jail under the orders of another federal judge. Politicians have been weighing in.
I would agree that what Kim Davis did, in my opinion, was heroic, and she suffered the consequences from it.
For the first time, we're seeing a Christian woman thrown in jail for standing up for her faith. I'll tell you, I stand with Kim Davis.
All across the country, people are calling this a war on Christianity. But is it? Is it really? Keep in mind, the woman who won't issue marriage licenses to gay couples because of God's law has herself been divorced three times, twice from the same man. Currently, Kim Davis is married to her fourth husband. Now, biblically, Jesus himself never speaks of homosexuality, but he does condemn divorce and remarriage. Luke 16:18 says, "Everyone who divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and he who marries a woman divorced from her husband commits adultery." But there is a bigger issue here than just a theological one. Why does Davis think that marriage licenses have anything to do with God? Aren't they a function of government? Is there any connection between a marriage license and the Bible? Well, no. In fact, nationally, marriage licenses in America are less than 100 years old. So where do they come from? Reality check here. They were created to prevent interracial marriage. Get this, for many years, interracial marriage was a crime. In the mid-1800s, certain states, though, began allowing interracial marriages as long as those marrying received a license from the state. Now take a look at this. Black's Law Dictionary points to this historical fact. It defines marriage license as a license or permission granted by public authority to persons who intend to intermarry. Intermarry, defined in Black's Law Dictionary, as mixed or interracial marriages. Not long after these licenses were issued, some states began requiring all people who marry to obtain a marriage license. In 1923, the federal government established the Uniform Marriage and Marriage License Act. They then later established the Uniform Marriage and Divorce Act. It was not until 1929 that every state in the Union had adopted marriage license laws. So what you need to know is that Kentucky actually has a religious freedom exemption. It includes government workers. It was passed back in 2013, and it states that no person can be compelled to provide a service that violates their conscience or religious beliefs. Kim Davis is protected by that. But what that law does not say is that the elected official in question can shut down government offices based on their own convictions. It simply says that they can recuse themselves and allow someone else to perform that duty.
Okay, we are at the end of the hour. I think that's a very interesting little piece of information there about marriage licenses, and I would like to know more about marriage licenses in Australia and how what they developed from. But as you can see, folks, the problem here is the increase in government power. That's the real problem. So, it's been great talking to you today. I will be back next week with more of the same. And I will see you then. Over and out from Truth News Radio Australia.